Well, there goes the old school bell, folks, and it's time to open the political school of the air again.
In yesterday's lesson, we were discussing that chapter in our textbook in which Fitz claimed that his experience entitled him to re-election. We learned that there were many kinds of experience. Experience in doing right, experience in doing wrong, experience in doing nothing. Both Fitz and John Dockweiler have had experience. In the political school of the air, we must study whether we think more of Fitz's experience than we do of Dockweiler's.
First, let's see what the office of district attorney means. Quite obviously, no district attorney can personally handle each and every one of the 5,000 or more cases that come before him.
The job of the district attorney is to fix the policy and the procedure. He has, in a very real sense, the power of veto. If somebody, for instance, demands that the millionaire John P. Mills should be prosecuted on a morals charge, the district attorney can say yes or no.
Especially no.
It happens in that case that Fitz did say no. Deputy George Stallman, on the evidence, wanted to prosecute, but Fitz demanded that the case against the millionaire be dismissed.
The same was true in dismissals in the Julian case. Fitz prosecuted a stenographer, a newspaper reporter, and a lot of small fry. He even prosecuted a stockholder for shooting one of the big bankers whose case Fitz had ignored.
But he never got around to prosecuting the people who stole the many millions. Today, for instance, Fitz is an avenging angel in prosecuting some little offender if he thinks that by so doing, he can smear us or Dockweiler or some other political opponent. But he has always been as meek as a lamb as far as Guy McAfee, Eddie Neilus, Charlie Crawford, Kent Perot, Bob Gans, and so forth were concerned.
The point we wish to make is this. What shall it profit the poor people of Los Angeles if they fill all their jails with poor people or the personal enemies of Fitz? If the big racketeers, the big gamblers, the big syndicate lawyers, the men who steal millions, go free?
Fitz has had 12 years' experience in giving immunity to big crooks to get them to testify against little ones. For instance, Bathhouse McDonald, Jack Bennett, and so on and on.
Fitz, in his advertisement of August 26, 1940, tells you that, quote, a threatening future makes inexperience a hazardous risk, end quote.
Fitz means that he has had 12 years' experience in his office, while Dockweiler has had 12 years of other kind of experience. From the standpoint of making policy for an important office, of getting an insight into the administrative problems, Dockweiler's experience in 12 years surpasses that of Fitz. For 6 years, he was in the Congress of the United States on important committees making policies for the United States of America, many of them strengthening our own Pacific Coast defense, gaining a broad experience.
So far as education is concerned, both Dockweiler and Fitz experienced going through the USC Law School. Dockweiler, however, took postgraduate work at Harvard. Fitz did not. Educationally, Dockweiler's experience surpasses that of Fitz.
Yes, Ed, and in talking about experience as an asset, we must not forget that experience sometimes is a liability. While it is true we learn by experience, we must remember that a good officer and a bad officer may be equally experienced. If our experience with them is satisfactory, we say, well done, faithful servant, and re-elect them. But if our experience shows them unsatisfactory, we dismiss them as unfaithful servants. John Dockweiler has not had that particular sort of experience in public office of which Fitz seems so proud, and for that we can all say we are very, very thankful.
John Dockweiler has never had the experience of being indicted, the experience of having to face a charge of perjury and obstruct a hearing on that charge for years, the experience of justifying false statements made from the witness stand by the plea that his mind was paralyzed. Dockweiler never had the experience of profiting personally from money paid by a man against whom he had dismissed a morals charge.
Fitz has had all these unique experiences and the additional experience within the last few weeks of being rebuked by an appellate court for lawless enforcement of the law, of being rebuked as an officer sworn to enforce the Constitution for having violated the guarantees of both the state and the national constitutions. This is not the sort of experience that fits the immortal definition which Thomas Jefferson laid down for Americanism.
Equal and exact justice to all men. Freedom of religion. Freedom of the press. Freedom of the person under the protection of the habeas corpus. And trial by juries impartially selected. These principles form the bright constellation which has gone before us.
Now let us examine the charges against Fitz, which Thursday's paper, October the 3rd, blazoned under the headlines, District Attorney Fitz ordered to answer contempt charge.
Quote, Buron Fitz must face a superior court hearing on charges that he should be held in contempt of court because he failed to do his legal duty. Judge Emmett H. Wilson overruled demurrers of Fitz's counsel. End quote.
Webster has filed a $65,000 damage suit against Fitz. This, of course, is not the same Mr. Webster who registered under that assumed name in the New York hotel. But this is the famous so-called mass murder, 5-year-old plot in which Fitz violated the secrecy of the grand jury in order to besmirch the names of some of the most respected movie stars in Hollywood with the smear of communism. Fitz knew he could make the headlines by smearing movie celebrities who since that date, one by one, have been exonerated, and now Fitz himself has been forced to plead not guilty to a contempt charge based on 6 counts of misconduct as follows.
Refusal to permit Webster to confer with an attorney after his arrest. Failure to allow Webster to appear immediately before a magistrate.
These are the very acts for which Fitz was recently rebuked in the liquor payoff case and which the court branded as lawless enforcement of the law. Fitz is also charged with using improper efforts to influence the grand jury, with violation of grand jury secrecy by press releases and statements over the radio, all in a pending case.
Now, if we were to comment on the current Webster case, as Fitz is accused of doing, we would possibly be adjudged guilty of contempt. But let's, in the light of what is being charged against Fitz, go back to another case in another campaign in which Fitz was charging Raymond Haight and others with being Nazis, with being in league with the underworld. And Judge Fitz, by what he said as a witness and by what his star witness admitted under the examination of attorney Frank P. Doherty.
In the 1936 campaign, when Fitz was also talking about his experience, Raymond Haight, an old schoolmate of Fitz, then said that he had known Fitz many years and had long since learned that he could trust Buron Fitz as far as he could throw an elephant. You see, Haight had been corporation commissioner and had called Fitz's attention to the gigantic frauds which had resulted in the robbery of the $200 million from Los Angeles investors, and he couldn't get Fitz to prosecute the guilty persons. They were rich and powerful men. Haight had experience with Fitz also as a prosecutor because Fitz, after neglecting to prosecute the real thieves, actually devoted his time to an attempted prosecution of Haight. This flimsy prosecution was thrown out of court. The editors of the Daily Record criticized Fitz for his official actions in letting the big Julian thieves go.
Fitz turned around and had the Record editors prosecuted.
But most of all, let us tell you how Fitz really values experience as an asset in public office. When he was first elected in 1928, Fitz's first act was to demand the resignation of 4 war veteran deputies. He called Frank I., Thomas Hart, Edgar Fee, and William B. Heinecke into his office and said,
I know you boys are members of the American Legion. There isn't any rap against you boys. It's politics. It's reorganization. I must ask for your resignation. Frank, you have always been loyal 100%. It's like cutting off my right arm to ask for your resignation.
Those experienced deputies refused to resign, and Fitz then brought charges against them, only one of which was sustained by the Civil Service Commission. That was Fitz's charge that the deputies had not conformed to the standards required by Fitz. Since Fitz had never said what his standards were, the 2 commissioners held that he was the best judge of that, and the new district attorney, the inexperienced Fitz, was allowed to discharge 4 experienced deputies. Commissioner George C. Madison wrote a scathing rebuke to Fitz, the first of many which courts were to make against Buron.
He said Fitz had opened the door to nullification of the civil service, and that a deputy supposedly protected by civil service now had no protection whatever.
the deputies brought 75 witnesses, including 34 court judges, who testified to their experience and their efficiency. None testified against them but Fitz and two witnesses who were able to prove nothing. There on the record, we find the testimony of how Fitz gained his vaunted experience.
He became a deputy in 1920, and most of his time, we find, was spent on one continuous jamboree of political and outside activities. He ran for lieutenant governor while on the payroll as a deputy. He campaigned incessantly. Then he was elected lieutenant governor, and with his term half served, decided to run for district attorney.
From the day he was admitted to the bar in 1916 to the day he became district attorney in 1928, Fitz had been nominally in the district attorney's office getting his experience at taxpayers' expense. Actually, his experience was political. Let him name the cases he personally prosecuted while he was deputy under Asa Keyes. Fitz never practiced law, really. Since 1928, when he became district attorney, he has been so tied politically that in many important cases, he has had to go outside his own staff of 174 deputies, clerks, detectives, and so forth to find an outside prosecutor to handle the case, just as he did in his first prosecution of Asa Keyes. Fitz's experience consists of a mixture of politics, publicity, and promises that were never fulfilled.
We all prefer the sort of experience we find in Dockweiler's record to the kind of experience we have experienced with Buron Fitz. But before we adjourn our political school of the air, the truant officer wants to conduct his regular political show-up.
Buron Fitz, stand up. In 1930, you had a detective on your dry squad named Orion Childers. You fired him, sir. Why? Orion Childers stated on April 25th, 1930, in a Los Angeles newspaper
that he had been a policeman for 20 years, and that in all those years, the only person who ever told me to lay off an arrest was District Attorney Fitz.
Childers had raided a swanky breakfast club and brought in 8 half barrels of beer, a quantity of wine, alcohol, and scotch. He got to the office, and you, Buron Fitz, called him in and said,
"For the love of Mike, what are you trying to do? Do you want to ruin me with a breakfast club? Take that liquor back and turn those men loose."
Childers turned the men loose and lost his job. It was your policy, Buron Fitz, to prosecute many poor and ordinary persons during these prohibition days, but never to bother the rich and the powerful.
Step down.
This program comes to you, if you remember now, 4 convenient times daily.
9:30, while you wash the breakfast dishes.
And 5:30, while you wait for the folks to come in for dinner.
7:30, before you go out for the evening.
10:30, when the day is done.
Remember, Doc Weiler's the man.
And November 5th is the time.
And the voting booth is the place to say,